Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Welcome to the property planner, buyer and professor. And this week, it's my absolute pleasure to be playing host and being joined in the virtual studio by my two lovely friends and co-hosts, Dave and Pete. How are you both?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Kate.
Very well. Thanks, Kate.
We're particularly happy here in South Australia. Our Premier announced our roadmap out of COVID-19. So for us here in South Australia, 23rd of November is the magic day where double vax people will have a lot more freedoms. And very importantly, my children from interstate will be able to come to South Australia without vaccinating, assuming they are also coming from LGAs with at least 80% double shots. One of my kids comes from Canberra, and I don't know how the Canberra people did it, but more than 95% of them have had a shot. That's just phenomenal. So she'll have no problem coming here. The other one's in Melbourne, and hopefully things stay calm there so she can make it over for Christmas.
How wonderful. And I'm looking forward to being able to go to Adelaide. I can catch up with you, Pete, and have coffee and cake somewhere cool. And yes. See one of my nearest and dearest buddies who I haven't seen for a long, long time. So it will be such a thrill. It's the state that feels like it's throwing the welcome mat out the hardest to us in Victoria. So I'm very grateful.
Well, even Dave's coming over to Adelaide.
Yeah, hoping to get over there for the Adelaide test.
We're not talking about that. La, 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 la.
Love Adelaide. I had a business over there for a while, as you know, Pete. So. Yeah. Always gave me a good excuse to get over there for when Collingwood were playing.
Right, okay. On that note, we were just talking before about the reopening fatigue, and I know our Sydney buddies felt it as well. Anyone that's been in an extended lockdown and then finally they're allowed out, and Melbourne's freedoms have been coming hard and fast quickly, which has been lovely. But we're getting a bit fatigued because we're not used to socialising. Dave, you were just saying, you know, the kids' sport and the stuff that's on and having to get ready for work and for school. I mean, my daughter's had such a change. She can't stay in her hoodie and her Ugg boots until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. She actually has to get up and make a lunch and get her school uniform on and get on the train.
Yeah, we're getting tired just thinking about it, I think.
My husband's given us a two-thing limit, which is not working for me because I can do two social things in a day, but his limit is for a week.
Yeah, we certainly enjoyed the first weekend out and about and probably has taken a couple of days to recover, to be honest.
Bit of a sore head and dusty outlook on Monday morning.
Yeah,
that was guilty that as way, well.
Yeah, in our team. So half of Melbourne felt like that on Monday.
I think so. It was a slow day.
So, Kate, what's your market update?
Well, Pete, I have an interesting market update. It's not so much an up-to-the-minute update, but it's something that was a little bit novel that I came across in my travels when I was in Ballarat. And in a lot of these regional cities, you find that the agents are calling for best and final offers, or they're having a little bit of a back-and-forth battle with the interested parties as opposed to an auction or a boardroom auction, which is very city-centric. And the issue that you have with back-and-forth is if people's terms are different or if they have more conditions on associated with their offer, the offers aren't equally weighted. And so some agencies will provide guidance to buyers prior that they're about to enter into a competitive situation and they need to be unconditional. But when they're facing a buyer pool that don't want to be unconditional, or they're dealing with a lot of first-time buyers who might have to consider the cost implication of ordering a building inspection for something they might not get, they have to get a bit more creative. And this guy was talking about introducing what we call a little bit of a penalty, or if you like, a handicap. And so they rate the handicap like a menu. If you want a building and pest inspection, it's $5,000 taken off your price. If you want a subject to finance, it might be 10, or it could be
really?
Five. Yeah, depending on the vendor's sensitivity.
Makes it clear, I guess, for everybody.
It does. And so he handed me this list and said, here are your handicaps. Which ones do you want? and that was great.
That's
because,
good.
Yeah, I could say to the client, well, you've got to have a think about whether you want to pay the money and get the building inspection done now. So risk your $600 because the handicap is $5,000. So if you're the successful buyer, you've got an additional $4,400 worth of, you know, a head start. Mm. It was a really interesting way of doing things, and I do admire it. And I thought to myself, you could do that with settlement terms when you've got someone wanting a super long settlement. I've used option arrangements before for longer settlements. So in other words, I'll bid on the basis of 90 days, but if we're successful, I'll pay an extra $10,000 for an additional 60 days. I mean, these things can all be facilitated. It just takes a bit of creativity.
Very interesting indeed. Very interesting. Dave, what about you? What's your market update?
That's really interesting, Kate. Makes a really level playing field. Everyone knows the rules of the game, and it's very inventive. CoreLogic just put out another little report overnight showing that house prices have fallen in 7% of Australian suburbs during the past 3 months, which is a sharp rise from the March peak when just 1.4% of suburbs posted a decline. So just we're always looking for little market signals. It's not guaranteed, you know, that it's an overall trend, but we do know the market is generally softening. So I just thought that was interesting. You know, some of the usual suspects are in those 7%, so mining towns, outer suburbs, but there are some unexpected suburbs in there as well. So, for example, in the last quarter in Melbourne, Armidale, which is a blue chip inner east suburb, actually went backwards. So did Box Hill, so did Mount Albert, so did Blackburn. Now, that might just be, you know, I'm sure the lockdowns played a part in that and will have probably distorted the numbers with some level, lower level of sales. So it'll be interesting to see how this progresses, but it's just another little potentially early sign.
This is 1 month though, Dave, isn't it? Just 1 month.
Over three months.
Interesting, yeah. Because it's obviously median data, so it's the midpoint. It's not like one phenomenal sale will skew the data because they're taking the middle piece of data. But you only need a handful of unit sales or a disproportionate number of unit sales in any one area to skew that data. Let's say there was a high-rise building release and all of that data counted. We've got to be really critical looking at data, but I think the interesting thing with those eastern suburbs you mentioned, you know, Box Hill, very Chinese-centric suburb. We're not getting the demand there from foreign buyers that we were, even with the introduction of some of our heftier taxes on foreign purchasing. So I think you've got a really good angle there for a bit of a story. It'll be interesting to see what happens next quarter.
Yeah, it will be, won't it? Even Armidale has probably a higher proportion of apartments and units. And I just wonder with the lockdown, you know, less sales. So the numbers could be more skewed over that three-month period. But I thought it was an interesting
yeah, certainly little, very interesting pickup there, Dave. You know, in a world where everyone's talking about markets going up by over 20% on average, and they have for most places for the whole year, but maybe these could be some leading indicators. Maybe they're not. As both of you said, maybe it's the quality of the data. There's not a lot of it. Or there's been some sales that have skewed it, or like you say, foreign buyers really haven't been buying really for the last 18 months, so maybe it's just this is a result of it. So watch this space. So thank you very much, you two, for your market update.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
Now, Pete, you've masterminded a really exciting episode for us today. I love it. And I'm proud that I'm able to host it because you've captured the A to E of capital growth drivers and you've made it really simplistic in its format, but there's a lot of detail hidden here. So without further ado, I'm going to cover off what A equals, and that is area, being location. So can you have a chat to us about your five drivers or points of interest when considering picking the area?
Location is really, really important in property because that's basically the only factor that you can't change. You can change the size of the house by making it bigger, by putting an extension on. You can change the condition of the house by renovating it. You can get rid of the house by knocking it down. You can make the block of land bigger by buying part of your neighbour's land. You can make it smaller by subdividing. But the one thing that you cannot change is its location. And it's not just its macro location, but it's its micro location. Like you can't change the street that it's in or the position of the street. So far as location is concerned, in my opinion, if you're looking for capital growth, it's proximity to the CBD. Now, this is not just Australian-centric, but this happens in many places around the world. Not every single place around the world, but most places around the world. And one of the main reasons that proximity to the CBD is so important is because that's where the highest concentration of jobs are. Not most jobs, but if you're looking on a per square kilometre basis, that's where the highest concentration of jobs are. With COVID-19 and the movement to working from home, the CBD won't be as important as it has been in the past, but I think it'll still be the most important amenity or facility so far as property is concerned going forward. So I would encourage people, if they're looking to buy property for capital growth, considering your location, proximity to the CBD is number one, and number two is proximity to the water. So proximity to the beach. But some beaches are more important than others. So in Sydney, being in a beachside suburb, you find that those property prices are really expensive as compared to, say, a beachside suburb in Brisbane. Because generally, people don't live in a beachside suburb in Brisbane because of the beach. But you would live in a beachside suburb in Sydney or Perth because of the beach itself. So for me, the two biggest factors are being close to the city and being close to the sea. Also in Perth, being close to the Swan River, in Sydney, obviously being around Sydney Harbour is really important. So bodies of water are the key, and the most important body of water is the sea.
That's really interesting. And obviously you've mentioned water there, and I'm sure that encapsulates lakes as well. I know when you go to somewhere like Ballarat, you know, where the key feature there is Lake Wendouree. And if you've got a property around Lake Wendouree, it will be in the millions. And that's a regional city, and that's a significant price point for a regional city. You've talked before about mountains as well. What are some of the other environmental things?
Firstly, going back to your lake thing there, Kate. So in order, it's proximity to the sea, proximity to a river, proximity to a natural lake, and proximity to an artificial lake. But also having views in particular of open spaces. If I use Adelaide as an example, having views of the hills, the Adelaide Hills, is really important, or having a view of an open space like a park or a reserve rather than just, say, houses across the road. If you have a park across the road, that can certainly add value to your property. You'll pay more to buy it, but in theory, you will sell it for relatively more as well.
And that is, you know, a really good way to explain how pricing on hotel rooms works and also how pricing on high-rise apartments works. And I know we don't really get excited about high-rise apartments, but a lot of people do. And depending on your city as well, you've got, you know, Melbourne, we've got the Albert Park Lake View, or you've got the inland view, you might be looking over a private school, beautiful school grounds. If you're looking at another building or if you're looking at a hospital, that comes at a lesser price tag than if you've got a gorgeous vista.
Yeah, look, there's a number of other factors that are important too. Proximity to amenities and facilities. And again, water features here. It's amazing. I don't know what it was like in Melbourne, but, you know, when lockdown ended, which wasn't long for us, but when lockdown ended, well, you couldn't get a park down at the beach. Like there were, and it's not that people were swimming because it was in the middle of winter, but people just walking or walking their dogs, whether it was on the esplanade, whether it was on the sand. So, again, another reason why properties are so expensive by the beach is people want to be close to it. They may not go swimming there every day, or they may not go walking along it every day, but just the amenity that being close to the beach provides is very appealing for people, and they'll pay more to buy a house there or they'll pay more in rent so that they can live there and enjoy those amenities.
Fascinating, Pete. Now, you've got a few more elements here in this list. School zones, public transport. Let's cover that one off.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question there, Kate, for our Melbourne listeners. Which high schools, public high schools, are highly sought after there and people are keen to buy property within that zone?
Look, we do have quite a few. Uni High is a popular zone and, you know, that requires you bring pretty much in the very inner northern segment of the inner ring. And we've got Baldwin High, McKinnon High. I'll keep them coming. Frankston High. Glen Waverley High. Yeah, how could I forget that? And then you've got new campuses as well. I know that Sandringham Secondary College gets a few people thinking about where they are. But the thing that's really important to note about school zones is there are a lot of cultures that get really excited about a school zone. So it's not necessarily mainstream. It's not always Australian-born residents that chase them. But it depends on how many children you've got and what sort of needs the kids have, what sort of interests they have. Because if you've got a highly academic school with, you know, scores that are breaking records, and you've got a child that isn't going to respond well to that environment, I see parents often segmenting the schools that they're choosing for their kids, and so they might have kids at multiple schools. Now, paying the premium to get into a high school zone and not utilising it is potentially a waste of money if you could get an equally beautiful house and save some money and then send your children to the appropriate private school. So there's always that cost-benefit analysis required for private schools and public schools. But there's no doubt about it. It's been a growth driver. And I've watched when boundaries have changed or when schools have climbed up the rankings on our school system in rankings chart, and people will pay top dollar. So it is something to be mindful of. From a capital growth point of view, it could be rewarding, but as we all know, we're all parents. You only need a change of the guard or a change at a school for the negative, and its grip can be a little less. It can be impacted. And likewise, if a new school pops up or a new campus pops up that caters really well and scores really highly, it can take the shine off the other school.
Now, schools' reputations do change. I remember the school that I went to, which was Underdale High School here in the western suburbs in Adelaide. That was very popular, but down the road at Adelaide High School, nobody wanted to go there. Fast track 20 years and it's completely changed. Adelaide High School is one of the most sought after high schools in Adelaide, and Underdale High School is not so popular. So for those people looking to buy into a school zone, whether you're going to be living in Adelaide or you want to buy an investment property and you want that maybe extra fillip of capital growth. So Adelaide High School, Adelaide and Botanic High School, they're two different campuses. Glenunga International High School is probably the most popular one. Brighton Secondary School by the beach, Norwood Morialta High School, Henley High School. And all these high schools are important for different reasons. Some are PE specialist schools, some are music specialist schools, some like Glenunga International High School run the International Baccalaureate program. Some also have programs for students of high intellectual potential. Adelaide High School has a great languages program. So these are other things where not everyone may not pay top dollar to live there, but in particular, families of school-aged children would be seriously looking at it. And you made a very good point there, Kate. Boundaries can change. And Adelaide High School here is a classic one where the boundaries changed a couple of years ago and some of the local residents that missed out were up in arms about the boundary change. And it seems like it was a political move to change the boundaries. Yeah, but you got to keep your eyes open. It's not just set and forget. You got to keep
Absolutely.
Your eyes open.
Whenever I have a client who is really keen on getting into a high school because they're about to have kids or they've got a toddler or a newborn, I'm really reluctant to get excited about something that's close to the border of the school zone. I want them to be smack bang in the middle of it. If that's their wish, I don't want to take any chances because a lot can change between birth and turning 12.
Very true.
Okay, Pete, so let's move on to B. And B stands for bungalows and other character period styles. I love how you've done this, the A to E.
It should be character, but I couldn't think of anything else with a B. But everyone in Australia has bungalows. Actually, certainly New South Wales and Victoria and South Australia have bungalows. We refer to them with the same name, but they're slightly different styles. But basically, they're all properties that were built before World War II. So I'll get you to rattle off some of your styles very shortly, Kate, because you're really good at that with those Victorian styles. But in Adelaide, if you're looking for a character property, we call them bungalows. villas, and there's different types of villas, just like there's different types of bungalows. There's Californian bungalows, there's gentlemen's bungalows. We have return veranda villas. We also have Queen Anne villas, and also cottages, whether they're single-fronted cottages, symmetrical cottages, workmen's cottages. Basically, anything built before World War II, and the older, the better. Now, many cultures new to Australia wouldn't understand the logic of that, because they think, why would you pay so much money for something that's 100 or 120 years old compared to, you know, they understand paying top dollar for brand new, like, you know, you pay top dollar for a brand new car. It works similarly with cars. Like, you're not going to pay much for a 30-year-old car, but you'll pay a lot for a 60-year-old car or 70-year-old car. And again, it's that demand and supply. They're not making any more original 1950s cars or 1940s cars. They're not making any more original turn-of-the-century character homes. So it's that limited supply. Plus, there are some great features. They generally have high ceilings, big rooms, timber floors, stone fronts, so architecturally very appealing and also solidly built. Kate, what are some of the styles that you can rattle off for us in Victoria?
Well, we started with colonial, and you see a little bit of that in your provincial towns and the oldest parts of our cities. Then you merge into Victorian era, Federation, you've got Edwardian. Then you've got your, as you mentioned, bungalows. We typically have Californian bungalows. You'll see some Spanish mission as well, beautiful archways and lots of brick detail. Then we merge into post-war, where the windows are smaller and the materials were a bit scarce, and a lot of red clinker brick type properties. Dave, you've got a street full of those. And then we get into mid-century, and unfortunately things kind of deteriorated once we hit the 80s and 90s and had the low ceilings and the cheaper fit outs, but you still get some really beautiful architecturally designed homes that represent those eras superbly as well. You see sunken floors, vaulted ceilings, cathedral ceilings. So we have a great array of architecture. I think Melbourne has a good widespread, but if we go into other states, there's some really beautiful properties in Queensland. You've got your high set Queenslanders, wraparound verandas. And you go down to Tasmania, and Tassie and Sydney have a few similar style colonial era dwellings as well. You get a lot of stonework. We're very, very spoilt with really pretty buildings here. And Pete, to your point, you mentioned that they become limited. They're scarce. The rarity of these types of products is what gets people's hearts beating. And the reality is, when you take a property that's 120 years old, you might have a run of terraces that from the front, from the street, they all look very similar. They might have different colours. Like, we get very good at doing that in our capital cities, creating a really gorgeous streetscape with alternating colours. But when you go inside, you've had 120 years worth of work and improvements and changes and personal touches. And it's very rare to get a terrace that's similar to another terrace. Even though they might be recent renovations, floor plans change over the years and people adopt different styles and flavours internally. So the beautiful thing about these properties is not just the scarcity value of an old property itself, but the fact that it is hard to put an exact value on, because it's not a cookie cut product. They change over the years.
Excellent. Very good. So we've got a huge range of older style properties. All have different names depending on which state you're from. But yeah, the older, the better if you're looking for that capital growth. Yes, there's more maintenance, but it's that emotional buyer in the end that could pay, you know, a blue sky price because they've fallen in love with the sandstone or bluestone front, the timber floors and the fireplaces, even though they may not work. But yeah, I would strongly encourage people, so far as the property is concerned, the older, the better.
Well said. Now let's move on to C. C is for capital growth is king. Pete, you've got 2 points here, so capital growth versus rental return, and we did an episode on this. Can I get you to detail that one?
Yeah, so look, again, being the most experienced on the podcast, not necessarily the oldest, but being the most experienced on the podcast, my experience and the research that I've done shows that so far as residential property is concerned, most people make more money from capital growth than from being positively geared, you know, $10 a week, $20 a week, whatever it might be. If people are looking for rental return, commercial property is a better option. But please beware, especially since COVID-19, what we've seen here again is residential property is very resilient when it comes to economic shocks, but commercial property is not. Just ask somebody that's 40 or 50 years old or more and ask them what happened to commercial property back in the 90s during the recession. Admittedly, interest rates were huge, but interest rates were huge, like I'm talking 20% for commercial property, but interest rates were 17% for residential property, and still residential property was resilient, mainly because people always need somewhere to live. But commercial property this time around is going to be very different. We've got more people will be working from home than ever before. And I met up with one of my past students yesterday. We had a coffee. She's a valuer. She works for a valuation office, one of the big four. And all the residential valuers work from home. The only time they get together is for physically is for like social functions, whether it's bowling or whether it's going out to dinner. So you can imagine they need less space. I mean, admittedly, residential valuers spend a lot of their time going out to houses to inspect them, and then in the morning and then in the afternoon they write their reports. But in the afternoon, they don't have to go back to the office to write their reports. They can do it at home. So that's just one industry. And there, I'm sure people listening here would know many people, whether they're family or friends, where they are working from home far more often now than they have been in the past. And also retailers changed. We got a taste for online retail straight after the global financial crisis, but our appetite has grown even more. So places like JB Hi-Fi or David Jones, I don't think will need as much floor space, but they will probably need more storage space, because there will be a lot more deliveries of goods rather than physically going to the store to check it out. So I think logistics or industrial will be a growth area. That's where people make stuff or they store stuff. But the commercial space and the retail space, please be careful.
Really, really good sagely advice. And, you know, Dave, you and I, you in particular, are a really good example of that. You've got your team working remotely, and that's been a change that's here to stay for you. I've got a team member who's announced she's relocating interstate, and, you know, for me it's business as usual. We'll miss her in the office, but her workflow will be exactly the same.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it's funny you talk about a valuation firm, Pete. My neighbour directly across the road is actually the CEO of one of Australia's biggest valuation firms. And, you know, out the front on the weekend, we were just chatting about the plans as we go back to the office. And even though, you know, we've only got 21 full-time staff and he's got hundreds, yeah, the plans are pretty similar. People going back probably only needing to be in the office 2 days a week if they're a bit newer. Staff maybe in the office a few more days for training. You know, and if they've got more experience, then, yeah, they might only need to be in the office 1 day a week. So, yeah, that's certainly going to be a significant change. And as I think we've touched on before, I think quite a bit of commercial retail we'll find will convert to residential in the better located areas. And that'll include in the CBD, I think, and then also probably around shopping villages where there's been smaller commercial that just may not rent out, and it'll be developed into residential property. I think that's going to be part of a transition that's going to happen there.
And that's happened in the past too, you know, where warehouses were converted to residential, like we're talking, you know, many years ago, and more recently commercial buildings in the city were converted to apartments. So again, this is just another round of repurposing.
Just sped it up again. Yeah. Look, if you talk capital growth, you know, one of the things we obviously spend a lot of time on is educating our listeners, and precisely what today's episode is about, on what's going to drive out performance. And if you just like bring it back to the numbers, because at the end of the day, if you remove the emotion and it's from an investment perspective, at the end of the day, it's about making the numbers, which are the dollars, work for you. So then you can use those dollars to enhance your lifestyle. And, you know, if you start with $1 million investment and you get the difference of a 2% return only in 10 years, 5% versus a 7% return, just in 10 years is $350,000. In 20 years, that's a difference of over $1.2 million to your net wealth.
And isn't the compounding effect just incredible?
Yeah. And 30 years was just the last one I had there, which is $3.3 million, as little as 2%. And so that's why we all dig into the detail around making sure or helping our clients make great property decisions, because those numbers, the power of compound growth, I think, you know, Albert Einstein was quoted as saying it's the most powerful tool known to man. I don't think the word was tool, but I haven't quite got that quote precisely right. But yeah, long-term compounding effect, it's hard to fathom, but just 2% difference can be over $3 million in your retirement kitty down the track.
Interesting stuff. Now, in the interest of time, our A to E is up to C.
So we better get a move on then.
We better, yeah. Now, clearly one of the key components for capital growth is also land, and we did last week we talked about this. Bigger is not necessarily better. It's the quality of the land. And we can refer to having another listen to last week's episode to recap that. D is for dirt. Now, Pete, let's talk about the dirt.
Okay, so I know we're running out of time, so I'll be very quick. So, look, if there's only one thing you remember here, it's the value in real estate's in the land. So I've talked about location, I've talked about the character homes, but the land is critical. Like, there's no point in having a great location, being in a lovely gentrifying in a western suburb, if you're living in a modern high-rise apartment, right? Because there's no land component there. You want to make sure that your land is ideally located close to the city or really close to the water. It has an older style house on it. And like we said last week, it's not just about the size of land, because 200 square metres of land 2Ks from the city can be worth more than 2,000 square metres of land 50Ks from the city. And also, if you're looking at development, it's not just the size, but it's the frontage. Also, as we talked about last week, check out the overlays. Is there a heritage overlay? Is there flooding issues? Are you under the flight path, which will restrict you on your height? Or maybe you'll have to put in extra noise dulling facilities. So check all of that out. The value is certainly in the land, but also keep in mind where that land is located.
When we think about that patch of dirt, think about what its orientation is, where the backyard will face, where you'll get natural light, what's around you. Are there any troublesome neighbours? I'm not necessarily talking about ratbag neighbours. I'm talking about something over the road that you might not want to live opposite. So identifying the area where you're spotting your piece of dirt and then looking at the macro and micro components of that bit of dirt, right down to, you know, your neighbours and what you can do with your land, the encumbrances, as you mentioned, Pete. Now, we're up to E, and this has got your name all over it, Dave. Equity and how we use it.
Well, look, I think, we touched on equity last week as well, and the power of using equity to grow your investment base. And because you're growing the biggest value number, and that's the value of the property. And that's one of the other reasons we focus so much on capital growth. One of the powerful things that often isn't talked about with capital growth is you can't spend it. Okay, so with cash flow, with your rental return, you can spend it and lose it. Not everyone's great at saving, you know, every surplus penny, but capital growth, you can't spend it. And so, but you can access it to do more investing. And rental income, because it's how the banks look at it from a serviceability perspective, they shave so much of the actual rent away when they factor it into your borrowing capacity. It doesn't necessarily help your borrowing capacity as much as you might think or as much as your own income. Whereas equity is the key element that you then can leverage against to keep getting into other property. So using equity is fundamental. And whether, you know, that's to invest into a combination of shares and property, being able to grow that bottom line, it's just another reason focusing on capital growth is such a powerful thing to do, because it can catapult you into your next and next and next property.
Nice.
Dave, you'll be proud of me. I had a chat with some young people at uni last week, and they're asking me, so they've got a home now, you know, should they sell and buy the next home? Should they keep this and then buy the next home and then sell? And I said, why don't you just buy the next home, full stop? So now you've got two properties going up in value, and then when this, you know, upswing of the property cycle slows down, then you can buy in a softer market, but you've had two properties going up in value for a couple of years rather than just one. Do you like that bit of advice, Dave?
Awesome, Pete.
Oh, mate, it's knowing you for almost 20 years, I reckon. Through osmosis, some of that good stuff has come through.
It's not too late for you to become a property planner, Pete.
He's got an opening.
And you're happy for me
it's
to
always
work
an opening
aren't
for
you?
Pete, 100%.
I can work from Adelaide.
I'm getting towards too close to being the oldest in the business, Pete.
Welcome to the club, Dave. Yeah. Welcome to the club. Everyone's got more hair than us. Yeah.
Funny how that happens as you get older. You become more often the oldest person.
That's all right. It's wisdom. It comes with wisdom and experience, as Pete says.
Yeah.
Now, that brings us to a close on the A to E of capital growth drivers. And, Pete, thanks for your wonderful notes. We'll embed them in our show notes. Now, before I let you guys run off to your lectures and your team meetings, have you got some gold nuggets up your sleeve?
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Your turn, Pete.
Okay, so my gold nugget, so the A to E of property, you can also remember it as the three L's: location, land, and looks. If you remember that, then you should be setting yourself up very nicely for retirement, or even maybe retiring before most people do, which is 60 years and above.
Wonderful advice. Who doesn't want to retire or choose when they can retire?
Correct. That's the key.
Yeah, it's about
being able to choose.
Scale back. Yeah. I don't think I ever want to stop.
That's my issue too. Yeah. You create this freedom and then you want to go to work. Anyway. Yeah.
So I'm going to focus on the dirt. One of my tips would be when you're looking to buy property, imagine, forget about the dwelling and for a part of it, and just think about the dirt that it's sitting on. Where is it located? In the street, in the suburb, you know, in the city? As Pete touched on, the dirt is the thing that can't be changed. A dwelling can be hard to change, and that can be a positive or a negative, subject to the quality of it and the floor plan, etc. But as we talk about the land to asset ratio, you want about 70% in the underlying value. I think often people spend 70% or more of the time thinking about the dwelling, and if we're talking about investment perspective, and not enough thinking about the dirt. So spend some time just contemplating the quality of the dirt, and even, you know, spend 70% of your time choosing the right patch of dirt, and you'll go probably a lot more right than wrong.
For anyone who's dealt with land remediation issues and environmental protection, I believe they'll be rocking in the corner, me included.
And the problem is with remediate, you don't know. Just looking at it, and even when they test the soil, they might drill six holes and the report comes out fantastic. But there could be contamination in areas where they haven't drilled. So,
I hope he doesn't hear this one. You've absolutely nailed it. Oh, that bit of the block, we'll have to go back. Oh, how joyous.
The boring old dirt, get the dirt right.
Yeah, it's more than just dirt, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, it's been great to see you guys. I look forward to next week's episode.
Thank you very much. See you next week.
See you later.
See you next week, guys.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about how to pick an A-grade property and an A-grade piece of dirt, take a listen to episode number 7, How to Assess and Select Property Like an A-grade Buyer's Agent. Episode 14, How to Choose a Location for Investment, What to Look For and What to Avoid. Episode 16, Unpacking Land to Asset Ratio. Episode 60, Why Established Properties Outperform. And episode 89, Capital Growth, What Increases Property Value.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia, and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast, and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.